Oh, the shame that will get if you let all the fans down.
Can we not lock this?
It's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
All right, welcome along to Team 33. I'm Raf Giallo. As always, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. That's at Team 33. We're also on Facebook, also on iTunes, and you can get some interviews on YouTube as well. We have a packed studio for today. Derek Ryan.
Hello, Raf.
Joe Coffey's on the way. Jonathan Higgins.
Hi, Raf. How are things?
Connor Neville returns.
How are you doing, Raf?
And Kieran Bradley makes it two shows in a row as well. So this is some achievement from you. So plenty to talk about. Obviously, we've been watching the Women's World Cup, and hopefully later this week I'll be chatting to one of the players from the USA from 1999 and also 1991. So hopefully looking forward to that. And then next week, what we're going to be doing as well, we're going to be talking street football and other matters, League of Ireland, etc., with Paddy Mulligan and Mick Cook, who were both teammates of Shamrock Rovers in the 70s and regulars on the show over the years as well. But maybe just to kick off, it is 25 years since USA 94 today anyway, or at least the Ray Houghton goal, the Paul McGrath performance.
And 25 years since O.J. Simpson's...
Yes.
Bronco chase, which happened the night before.
He has a Twitter account now.
So he does.
It was apparently Domino's Pizza's highest deliveries of all time.
Really?
Because they went in from the World Cup straight into the O.J. Simpson.
What a lethal combination that is.
I remember reading somewhere that all the Irish fans didn't really know what was going on. They were watching telly and suddenly they were showing an O.J. Simpson chase.
Irish fans who were in New Jersey or New York that night.
I think it was your piece that I read, wasn't it?
Yeah, and... The Knicks were playing, I think, the Houston Rockets in the NBA Finals, and everyone was kind of watching that in the pub or whatever that the Irish fans were in. And
they're called bars.
The bars over there. Okay, I apologize, but as you might have seen from
and Joe Coffey has arrived
just on time.
Late.
We usually wait
for
him.
He's airy today.
Go by my standards anyway.
So as you might have seen from the O.J. Simpson series, that they took the decision to switch from the NBA final to this car chase. And the Irish lads I've spoken to said the entire pub was up in arms and they were all screaming.
Did they even know who O.J. Simpson was?
Well, the Irish lads?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. But the point is, the Americans, when they realised what was on the screen, which was O.J. Simpson's car... No one demanded that the basketball match be put back on, even though the Knicks were playing in the final. So it became. I don't know whether the Irish lads knew much about.
You're talking about that day where all the mad things happened in the States. That 30 for 30 documentary.
Well, we are now. I think we were.
I said the words USA 94, Ray Houghton, Paul McGrath, and then he opened his mouth and he said that.
That's a tangent and a half, isn't it?
But no,
it was the day of USA 94 opened. O.J. Simpson sped off in his Bronco, and the NBA basketball finals.
But we don't have to provide you with any more recaps of what we've talked about from now on.
It was the U.S. Open as well.
Was the U.S. Open on as well? So. There you go.
Oh,
what a weekend!
Yeah, like I have to say,
a great weekend of sport in some ways.
It's incredible. It's my first Irish football memory. I just remember being as a kid. It was a Sunday night, if I remember right. I think the game was at 9 o'clock, and I remember being so excited that I was allowed to stay up to watch the game, and that was monumental for me because, unlike what we have now, you didn't have that many games on TV or the opportunity, particularly with Ireland then as well. And I just remember the night staying up for it. Of course, I think everybody remembers the goal and the celebration. God knows how many times I must have nearly broke my neck trying to. Replicated in the garden after.
Ray Head was like 30, like mid to late 30s. What was he doing that cartwheel?
They were a very old team, of course.
But Ray Head in particular, like Robbie Keane stopped doing that when he was probably, I don't know, 32 or something. Like Ray was he seemed a bit old. Maybe I don't know what age he was, but he seemed a bit older than that. What was he doing that celebration?
It was the earliest memory for a lot of people. I hadn't even followed the qualification, really. I remember the night they got through against Northern Ireland and not being quite into sport yet. I was a bit too young.
That was probably my first football memory from Ireland's point of view. Was watching that in the kitchen.
I was slightly baffled why everyone was so excited that we drew. And then my dad tried to explain the permutation and I lost interest.
I remember I hated Jimmy Quinn.
Yeah.
Because he's obviously scored the goal. I ended up hating
But him. I got into the Irish team very soon after the start of the next year, and I often think it was a very unfortunate time to get into them, because you got a very distorting impact of what it was like to follow the Irish football
team.
Well,
I actually
did. They beat Holland 1-0 in a friendly. Then they beat Germany 1-0 away in a friendly, and then they beat Italy 1-0. I thought this is an amazing
team
to follow.
Lifetime of happiness.
I remember my first memory of the team is actually them playing Spain in a 1993.
I remember that as well.
Mainly because it was on in the middle of the day because Lansdowne Road had no floodlights, so they had to play their internationals.
And sorry to interrupt, I remember this as well. And I remember George Hamilton, they scored their third goal, and George Hamilton shouted, "Misery!" Some random line of misery, and we lost 3-1.
But,
John Henton. What was his name? John. Who scored?
Sheridan.
John Sheridan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. John Sheridan played against Norway in that awful nil-all draw as well, actually. I remember that. But I remember Ireland beating Germany 3-1, or was it 1-0 or 3-1?
2-0 away.
This is in a warm-up for USA 94.
Yeah, 2-0.
2-0. And everyone, yeah. That song when you're a kid, like, you know, will really shake them up when we win the World Cup. I thought, well, Ireland must have just won a few World Cups at this stage. So
it's a curious thing, though, because if you don't remember Italia 90 and you do remember USA 94, it's odd because everyone who does remember Italia 90 talks about USA 94 as if it was a really crap sequel, basically.
Well, yeah. I think the point
which
of,
I would yeah. always defend it on the basis that we won a match at least. But
I remember my brother telling a story how they were in the pub, it was the Irish House in Castlebar, and the night of the USA Ireland match, and for some reason the TV at the front of the bar, or at the back of the bar, was a split second ahead of the TV at the front of the bar, so that everyone started roaring a second or two before they could see at the front of the bar what was going on.
Yeah, I have no memory of it whatsoever. I think it was only 5 and I didn't even like
Steve
football
Stalton
the time.
Hats even there were another
Steve Stalton hats.
There were another classic moment from that competition.
I also George Hamilton going, "Oh no!" when Mexico made it 2-0.
It was a model of impartiality. Wasn't it? Yeah. The Mexico game, by the way, it was so hot there, there were Irish fans fainting, I was told in the crowd that day.
Yeah, it was at the Mexico match.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure, it was insane. Sure, yeah. It was an absolutely baffling time to play a football match.
Yeah, I remember someone describing Steve Staunton running up the touchline as you would see a knob of butter go across. It was actually one of the my family over here from me, so it was one of the few times I was actually here for. My family actually used to do this thing where they would just dump me here for 3 or 4 weeks at a time, and it happened to be over the period of the World Cup, so I remember that and the Paddy Bonner's mistake there as well.
Yeah. It was terrific because England weren't there as well.
It was wonderful, yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah. Scotland weren't there either.
Yeah.
Wales are never there anyway.
No British team. None of the home nations.
Well, we're not British anyway.
We're not us. None of the British teams qualified.
Yeah, none of them. Yeah. But anyway, no. And also,
it was a full bread exit then, was it?
Yeah. No, I was just trying to make sure there's no confusion. Yeah.
The Twitter comments could be fun after this. Another thing that comes into mind for that tournament, of course, is the Aldo. Are you going to let me effing on here?
Well, I don't think the heat helped his blood pressure whatsoever.
Well, he was
either.
Right, though. I think he's been held back. But then he came down and scored the goal that qualified them for the next round anyway.
I just remember as a kid being so inspired by Aldo at the time. Obviously, he would have been a hero growing up in a Liverpool sporting family. He was always a hero. But the fact that I could watch him get so angry and so on, and then actually come on and like do his talking on the pitch as well. I just remember being so proud. I think this weird memory of just tearing down the hall in celebration at the end of that game as well. It's amazing.
Was he injured during that World Cup?
He was. He wasn't fit. He wasn't fully fit.
I remember Tommy Coyne started against Italy.
Yeah,
Noel Quinn was obviously
on the plane, wasn't it?
The day afterwards on the bus.
On the flight.
Or was it a flight?
Yeah, it was on the flight, I think, yeah.
The team was...
But I think he was that dehydrated, because I think... Did he have to do the drug test, I think, or something? Yeah, that was the reason.
The team was too old for that kind of climate anyway. I mean, even if they were younger, it might have been a bit of a help. Like,
they were too Irish for that climate.
You could say that too, yeah. I mean, it was... The actual Dutch game where they eventually made their exit was a thoroughly depressing affair.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it just felt like they were completely outclassed.
Was Burkamp
yeah,
for
but
that
we,
in there
we have had Burkamp far scored, worse
yeah.
performances.
Yeah, if only we knew, like, this was...
It only flew after that.
Yeah, I think they're playing plane incident happened at the World Cup, did it?
I'm not sure.
With Coyne?
Dennis Bergkamp.
Because Bergkamp flew to, obviously, that World Cup.
I'm pretty sure it happened at that World Cup. That's why he never flew again.
Maybe he's traumatised playing against Ireland.
Maybe that's what it was.
Well, he scored in that game, of course. So he obviously had...
Trauma takes different forms.
That was a good World Cup.
I don't like to make any grand claims, but for a long time, and this is how anal I was as a 6-year-old, I could remember every score in the 94 World Cup.
I filled out the score chart.
I think I had a score chart. Yeah, I could still give it a good rattle.
I could do it with 98.
That's great radio.
I know that's what the public.
The
wants.
Listeners want.
It sounds like the shipping forecast. I could do a James Alexander Gordon type of classified results from 1994. If people turned on, they'd be wondering what's happening.
I remember though being a kid, like it seemed like a monumental distance between each World Cup. Whereas now I'm like, Christ, it's a World Cup year again. Like
yeah, sure. We've had two World Cups on this show.
They zoom by. I suppose as a kid you're very different in 4 years, whereas as an adult things change, but not that much. I mean, I can well remember the 2010 World Cup, 2006 World Cup. I hated the 2002 World Cup. I thought it was awful. Definitely my least favourite out of them all.
I don't remember the 94 World Cup being particularly amazing. Maybe it's because the final was so...
It was a good final.
The final was awful.
Yeah. I thought it was very glamorous. Like, it was very American. It was kind of... It had that TV, the way that it was shot from the TV, it kind of reminded you of this, you know, this glitzy American kind of way they would go about things. But also just things like the theme tune. That was absolutely amazing. That's one of my earliest memories.
Absolutely
sure.
Colossal stadiums.
Stadiums were huge, but they weren't especially...
They were just big bowls.
They were just big bowls, that's all. Yeah.
But the nice
and
goals,
the final, the place that held the final was very unprepossessing.
Massive attendance, though. I think it's the
Rose Bowl, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Rose Bowl. I think the attendance was huge at it. Like it was bigger than any World Cup that's come since. It was bigger attendance than any World Cup.
Saw the jerseys getting a lot of.
But it was an interesting bowl in that I don't think it was tiered. It was just one tier all the way down from the top.
Fans who were there would say the tournament got completely lost
in America.
Yeah, and that half the people you met, or more than that, didn't even know it was on.
Interestingly, though, now if it's since it's going back there in 2026, I think the reaction would be completely different because I think soccer in America,
the Premier League has evolved so much. You look, I even saw a clip earlier on today from Liverpool fans. I think it might have been New York, one of the American cities, and it was around the Champions League final. The interest there, and I know from a lot of Liverpool supporters clubs over there, the brands are. TV brands, the way it's gone, the lure, the Premier League has expanded. So it will. I think
even out of interest, like I'd always after big soccer matches in the Champions League, I'd always click on the New York Times, the US edition, to see where it comes in the sports section, and it's always well up there. You know, you have your whatever I don't know, whatever's in season at the time, basketball and baseball, and then you'll have soccer.
Well, in '94, did they even have a National League?
MLS started 2 years after.
What
was in place of it? Sort of regional leagues?
Yeah, something like that. And then I think they would have had indoor soccer as well, because that replaced the old NASL. But they used the World Cup as a kind of springboard then to have a league, and it seems to have grown into something, which is kind of.
It was one thing I remember is
more teams coming through.
The goal, because I just and purely seen the goal again today, it brought back the goals for that World Cup. They were really deep.
Yeah,
they were they're very unusual looking goals in that they just had the whatever you call them stanch. Is it called stanchion?
At the back.
They came back in a straight, and there was nothing else there. Like they were very unusual looking.
Yeah. I remember thinking his goal, Houghton's goal, was absolutely incredible. Like, he mishit it.
Yeah. I shanked it.
Yeah, I still many years later.
Like I thought he logged Pagliuca.
I still don't think I've seen a goal like it in the
intervening 25 years. It's so weird. It's such a weird goal.
It was also bizarre. What?
Pagliuca.
What was he doing off his line though? What was he doing?
It's Ray Houghton.
Pirouette he did.
It's a very odd goal.
It's a very odd goal because he didn't lob him. Like it went straight over his head. Like it was. Such a strange goal.
It defies physics.
It does. That's what I'm saying. He definitely mishit it, obviously, but even still, it just kind of is very strange.
It was a very classic Italian performance at that World Cup. By all accounts, even though Italy came so close to winning it, you know, going to penalties and all that, the Italian fans had no time for the team or the manager.
Baggio got absolutely lambasted.
Missed the penalty as well, just put him over the edge like he was. The bullet was in his head. I know as was with that team at the time.
I always remember him playing in that World Cup final with this massive bandage across the back of his leg because he wasn't fit.
Yeah.
And they just basically, like, he wouldn't have, if it was a normal match, he just wouldn't have played. But because it was the World Cup, the final, they picked him.
Yeah, it was a lovely World Cup, ending with a penalty miss and starting with a penalty miss, of course, which is Diana Ross, one of those one of those great classic
moments. Around the world.
The shot heard around the world. But the funny bit is she just keeps running, though.
Yeah, she showed good mental strength there.
And the goal, the best bother.
The goals fell apart anyway.
Mental strength.
Good around the hotel.
Yeah, now that brings back kind of memories, obviously, with Paddy Mulligan and Mick.
We're not going to talk about the Supremes now, are we?
No. They had one really good song, or maybe two, I'm not really sure. But Paddy Mulligan and Mick Cook being in next week, talking about playing football in the 50s and stuff when they were kids. And just as a little segue, and this is not a smooth segue at all, I'm presuming you all played in teams when you were younger. Any memories that stand out? Were you actually any good?
I was awful. That's my last memory.
I wouldn't like to talk about that.
I was pretty bad. I went through a phase where in my teenage years where I was quite average, but I was pretty bad when I was a kid.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Some admission. I didn't play at all, not on proper teams. Yeah, actually, the first time I actually wore full kit out in 11-a-side was only a few weeks ago at the Emirates,
really?
Which did not end well.
For the benefit of our listeners,
he's wearing a cast right now.
Was the first time.
One of my memories of playing as a kid was I also broke my arm. I was in goal. My mate had a shot, and I broke my arm playing football as well. We don't have really good memories of playing football as a kid.
I'd be much more of an ardent GAA fan these days than I would be a soccer fan, but when I always preferred playing soccer to Gaelic football, mainly because you didn't need as much upper body strength in soccer to be decent at it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I always felt you needed a certain size, certainly came into it much more in Gaelic football.
I played for a team when I was around sort of 10, 11 or so, and had almost zero spatial awareness, which was obviously useful for a manager trying to kind of like coach around the pitch. But I remember one stage I like would very rarely score, but took the shot that, it's funny you mentioned stanchions actually, because it hit the stanchion at the back and came out. And to this day, that went in, but it was ruled out. So that was the...
It was an awful decision, I believe.
That's a disgrace, but you know, I've moved on.
Yeah, just weren't a lot of clubs around Leitrim. That was the only thing as well. I think you had to migrate across the border to Longford if you wanted to join any.
I did. I played soccer with one of our local clubs for a few years. Yeah, but we had. It was funny actually. It was Snubra was the name of the team, and the issue they had was that all the GA players, all the lads who played football for Castlebar Mitchells as it still is, they played soccer with Snubra, but the problem was that oftentimes the Gaelic match would clash with the soccer match, and obviously the lads would go and play Gaelic first because they were Gaelic players first and foremost and soccer players second. So there'd be one week we'd have an unbelievable team and I probably wouldn't start in that case. But then the following week when everyone else would be gone, I would start, but we'd end up getting absolutely hammered. So it was a bit of a...
Which do you really prefer here?
I return to the primary school forum here when we used to play football all the time during break. I did stand-up comedy a few years ago. I was kind of the Mayo of the stand-up scene. I used to get to finals in Edinburgh the whole time but lose them. But but I had a routine about this, about how when we used to play football in school at halftime, very occasionally we would play a match which was called All Against Ian. Which involved everyone else who played football in the class playing against one lad who happened to be called Ian, and so
I can see where you got the name from.
We had a very good record in that fixture. Needless to say,
but, we used to kind of do the exact same where the older kids, because I went to a small primary school, so there weren't. It's one of those small rural ones, and all the big kids. So myself, when I was kind of older, 5th year, 6th year, would play against all the youngest ones.
So you used to bully kids.
No, there was no bullying. We just we set up a dictatorship, and this is the way it was going to be.
This is the food chain.
I think I remember winning 51-4, and then you're kind of like, what's the point?
Just find there were people,
and then you go out and do it again like the following week. But anyway, yeah,
there were people there who used to celebrate their last goal as hard as any other goal, you know. If they're like sort of City fans at the FA Cup final, you know, would you not get bored?
Or a topical World Cup goal,
USA versus Thailand.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I remember we often played proper football in the neighbourhood like every summer. And then as people got older, there would be less people around because they work in summer jobs or gone off, whatever. So we came up with a new game then because there was only a few of us left that hadn't started doing summer jobs or anything. And then there was like kind of young lads, the next generation, who'd be like 7 or 8 years old. And we'd be about, I don't know, 12 or 13. So we'd start a match and we'd give them, we'd play up to 10, but they'd have a 9-goal head start. So it'd be 9-0 to them and we'd play. And eventually they'd get a crappy goal, but then there'd be the odd game where we'd actually managed to come and beat them 10-9. Jubilant celebrations.
Which we might switch it over to Frank Lampard and Chelsea, because that's actually the only newsy thing. I think we may have exhausted all the terrible things we did to people younger than us. But it looks like he's going to go to Chelsea. That seems to be all the talk. If I were him, I probably wouldn't do it, though. But then again, your bank balance once he gets sacked after a year tends to be decent.
In fairness to him, I think he's probably worried about the same thing, judging by his... reluctance to, I know he's, and like, in fairness, if you're in that position, of course the chairman's going to give you his, you're going to get 2 years, of course you're going to get 2 years. He won't, because if things go wrong he'll just get sacked. But
has he not got a bit of he wants leeway?
Well, I think
he's Lampard.
Well, I think he wants to take the job. He just needs that it's almost like a fake reassurance, because he knows himself, if Chelsea ends up in 9th or 10th like they have in the past, he'll get sacked. But he's banking on the fact that I would hope that we'll finish, you know, 3rd or 4th. You know, that's
But the point is, because he's Lampard, we'll not get a bit more time than any other manager ever has.
Yeah, it doesn't, sure, always, really work that, doesn't always work that way.
Because you look at the way the job has come about. Like, it's Sarri, I know there was a lot of issues and didn't really see light.
He actually did a good job, though.
But, like,
really,
he's doing an incredible job. Though, yeah, finished 3rd and run the Europa League. That's the barometer now. And I think... You're right when you say, Joe, I think Lampard is stalling a little bit, or he is looking for that reassurance, because the move would have been announced by now if it was. You saw the way the Chelsea announcement was, Sarri's leaving and but he's joining Juventus. Everything was done, lined up. I'm sure Chelsea would have loved to have done something similar with Lampard, and it would have been announced straight away. And the longer it rumbles on, you wonder, is he just having these second outs? I think it would be a bad move personally for both parties to yet. I think Lampard would be better served another year in his manager development, away from that spotlight, that's complete pressure cooker, what Chelsea will give them. And yeah, I think Chelsea would be better going for a more experienced manager at the moment. It just seems like you have an experienced manager with a particular style of football that he likes to implement and has started implementing, and then they've pushed him out the door. And you go give it to Lampard. Yes, I appreciate he's a Chelsea legend, and that's what he is probably. Maybe Abramovich is trying to put the little bit of spark back in the club again, get a bit of the love affair going, getting back one of her own guys. But it just seems weird. The timing and everything just seems a very weird appointment for me. I struggle really on both parties
that
to see
last
what's
point looks good. There's a PR element maybe to the Lampard.
I think it's almost late stage Chelsea now. Like we're 16 years into this project, and kind of obviously you have churns of managers throughout that period as well. But you know, they've gone through so many different types and big names, and now they've arrived at this. I think it's too early, frankly, and I don't think he doesn't seem to particularly want it, but he seems to be, you know,
it's one of those
concerned about saying no.
I could turn it down.
I could see the temptation from his point of view in that.
It might be the only time he gets offered.
If it works out, it's spectacular for your career.
I don't think it would be. I don't think it would be the only time.
But, if next season Derby have a disastrous start to the season, and he gets sacked, and then that's the end of it. He might not get offered the chance again. So there's that playing on his mind. But also, I agree, it's too early. It's at least a year too early.
I think the problem for Frank Lampard, it does not seem that the structures are in place in Chelsea for him to succeed as manager there.
No, especially with the transfer ban, we may be wrong.
But it would appear that the structures just aren't there for him to succeed.
Well, the structures, in terms, I know it gets done ad nauseam, but they have an enormous amount of talented young players there, and there's a decent core of a squad there that can be supplemented in a certain way, with Pulisic coming in. Like, we obviously don't know how he's going to compare to Hazard. But you know, it's not a complete kind of car crash. But I know what you mean in terms of like Emanalo and Granovskaya
and even just like the fact that you do have a chairman that's not really going to give you the opportunity to decide exactly. Like, it's not going to be like Derby, where he has he won't have as much of a say as he has, say, at Derby. But it just The problem is you have to ask yourself the question, and yeah, like, because they do have great talent, but at Chelsea, if he finishes third and wins the Europa League.
Yeah, where's the barometer now?
Like is that like a good season or?
I don't think Sarri was. Well, I mean,
they didn't like the football Sarri played. Granted.
Yeah, there's more to the Sarri thing than obviously. Yeah, I mean, if it was just taken in isolation, it's been a successful season for him. But there's more about what happened with Kepa and the and the stuff during the season with their drop in form and stuff. There's a lot more to that than just.
I mean, surely the penny has to drop for Abramovich eventually as well. That sacking managers is actually turning into a waste of time now because they're actually going through. There's not enough good managers out there that they can hire.
Well, it's worked for them though.
But they're running out of good managers to hire.
They're running out of styles.
Exactly. They're running out of styles.
You say they're frustrated with the football Sarri go to play, but everybody knew what you get with Sarri. It's Sarri ball, etc., etc. You watch his teams. You know the way he's going to play. You know the way he's going to set up. So it just seems like weird. Like if Lampard comes, what is he going to be given time to get implement?
Because he'd
style?
Have to get rid of Jorginho and all those things that are all Sarri disciples.
Look how long it took Klopp to actually get Liverpool to where he wanted them to be. And I'm not even talking about this season. Even the previous season. Like Klopp has a lot of years under his belt now, and. You know, Chelsea wouldn't have given Klopp that time.
No.
There's a sort of bored vibe around Chelsea.
There is.
They've gone through everything.
I think everybody's
bored.
They've seen
it all. They're all jaded. And now they're trying to re-inject some
magic.
Yeah. Well, brand values back. They're going back to basics.
He's
one of our Frank Lampard. He's one of our
getting
own.
Getting the old gang back together.
You know, there's a kind of emptiness to Sarri being
there. I was
there,
actually thinking, would Terry be interested in going in, because he's an assistant coach obviously at Villa, would he be interested in going in there in some sort of coaching role under Lampard? Maybe
get Ron Chopper Harrison, forget it.
Apparently Lampard doesn't want Terry. Okay. I was just reading today from a reasonable source, and it's quite interesting because Jody Morris is obviously his assistant there at Derby, and he's very highly thought of at Chelsea just because he came up through managed the youth system as well.
I wonder, would Terry though want to go in as an assistant at Chelsea? Does he see himself as, if I'm going to Chelsea, I'll be there as manager in a few years' time, not this season, but in five years?
I think Terry has management. He wants to be a manager.
I actually think that we kind of tend to group Terry and Lampard together in terms of necessarily how they felt.
Yeah, but actually, are they best friends?
Well, Terry was let go ultimately by Chelsea. I mean, like Lampard was.
I know. Lampard actually. Kind of went on his own terms.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, Terry was like, okay, good luck now. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're best mates.
You just group them together because they're part of that vintage.
It was the same with Gerrard and Carragher. They got on, but they were never best buddies that everyone would associate Liverpool with. Gerrard Carragher was Terry Lampard, and you had other little cliques. Like, it was just. Guilty by association, really, too.
There is a thing about Chelsea, though, there is an element of just being bored. I mean,
Logan Abramovich was bored.
I think
the City thing destroyed their plan. Their plan was to kind of dominate financially over a 10, 15 year period, and City came in and blew them out of the water.
I think the problem with Chelsea as well is that Abramovich stopped investing in the team, and that's what made Chelsea interesting, because there was always an element, who are they going to buy now? What big manager are they going to get in? And now they've gone back a bit, they're a little bit maybe above Arsenal, but there's that element of it's grand, it's a bit like Arsenal, the Arsenal approach, where you go, sure, it's grand.
I just think they're yearning for identity.
I think there seems
to be a bit of a split between sort of newfound Chelsea fans and the kind of hardcore older people who were just sort of they've seen how crap it can be as a Chelsea fan, and kind of pine for that in a weird way as well. There are people that sort of do that particular match.
But Abramovich, you look at what he's done there, and won how many league titles has he won? He won in 2015, was it 2015?
I know,
or 17 rather. Yeah. Sorry, 17 and 15. So in the last 5 years, it's and City have been the most successful teams.
Did they get much out of those league titles? Really?
Not really.
No, it's a complete sugar rush.
Well, you see, the problem they have there is that they've won league titles in this decade in particular without being recognised. At least when they won them initially under Mourinho, they were recognised as this amazing defensive team who, to be honest, were doing something different in football. You know, the way they were approaching.
But the recent title, nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
Was as flat as anything.
They just got to it because, to be honest, everybody else was useless. No, they picked up loads of points. But I think that football has changed now. Football, particularly in the Premier League and in any of the big leagues, it's become about having is winning the league, but saying something while you win the league. It's not good enough to win the league anymore. Now you have to say something when you win the league. So whether that's like City playing insane football and scoring loads of goals and getting loads of points, or it's Barcelona in the 20, you know, if you want, like, everyone can win a league title, but there's very few that can actually say something while winning a league title.
Yeah, because like you think City and you think straight away it's Pep, it's the style of football, it's amazing to watch.
And same with Liverpool now. You see, if Liverpool win the league, not only are they, it's not just a flash in the pan, we won the league, amazing. There's
a football culture there.
There's a culture. That's
and that's sadly missing at Chelsea. Yeah. It's strange that they. So many, yes, their squad is insanely lopsided, and particularly when you expand to all the if you class the overall squad, all the players that they have on their books initially before they're sent out on loan, like it's all over the place. You struggle to get an identity, you struggle to get an exact culture. What way are they going to play? What is the Chelsea way? Etc. Etc. They've
no local symbols in the team. I think that's another
that certainly doesn't help. And they you look, but Hazard gone, you know, who was going to be that star player that they can latch onto that. You know, other teams will have, whether it's your Agüeros, your Silvers, Salah, or whatever, your Kane, or someone like that. But they just struggle, and they need a breath of fresh air. And I'm not quite sure if it's Lampard.
It seems like the high watermark, and I know it sounds like a bit of a truism, but was the 2012 Champions League win for several reasons. There was kind of the squad was littered with people they brought through, that kind of spine, but they also did this thing that was kind of classic Chelsea in the real sense of doing it against someone, you know, doing it in kind of Bayern's backyard, and then being the first London team to win the Champions League
and playing
kind
of awful football.
Oh, horrendous. Oh yeah, exactly. If anything, that shows the decline, really, isn't it? The fact that they had played so good football to date, and then it was this horrible muck that they put together. And
well, that whole run was muck.
Oh, it was horrendous.
Are you saying that's key to Chelsea, though? The muck was part of their defiance.
Yeah, I really do. Like, I mean, if you think back of the kind of the old Stamford Bridge and the, you know, the kind of four Cortinas part behind the goals and that kind of thing. Like, this was a thing that united the sort of new Twitter, you know, far-flung fans from wherever, and the kind of old school lads who were, you know, kind of revelled in this sort of siege mentality, who, you know. But also, I think it could be a bit of a blessing in disguise, this transfer ban, if it is that they're looking for some sort of identity, because they might be forced into blooding a few youngsters and getting a little bit more of kind of vim vigour into the team. And in fairness, Jody Morris seems to be relatively highly rated in that regard. He was
heard lots of good things. Yeah,
yeah, he did a very interesting interview with Graham Hunter a while back, where he was going into his kind of philosophy, and it kind of belies the image that you might have of the man a lot of the time. I certainly learned a lot from it, so it could be interesting.
Yeah, I don't really remember Morris much from his
talent just went off the rails a little, but kind of got that kind of light switch moment where he copped on and has become an incredible coach. And it's almost, a lot of the stuff is almost like, kids, don't do the same mistakes I made, make the most of your talent. But yeah, and I think you're right, there's with that abundance of players and young players to go through, because otherwise you're looking at playing, no disrespect, your likes of your Barclays, you know, that type of a player where it's kind of average Premier League footballers, but nowhere near a Chelsea standard. They're better off kind of blooding some of the youth and giving them an opportunity, and Jody could be a good person.
Well, technically would be Chelsea standard if we're talking about where the standing of the club should be, which is pre-Abramovich.
If you go the average, the mean average over the course of
Dixon as manager, I really want an identity.
But it would be interesting to kind of deem what would be failure for Lampard this season, to kind of, you know, to cut the cord, because you presume even if they finish sixth, they would be like, okay, there's enough goodwill, depending on, you know, how it goes, because they might get some record low total.
If it's with a young team and no superstar or whatever, then yeah, it's probably acceptable, although not in the eyes of Abramovich, but in the eyes of everyone else, that is reasonable and has a perfect view of football. Anyway, apologies to Mr. Abramovich for judging him. Well, actually, I'm not sorry at all.
He's a big fan of the show.
Yeah. I'm sure he is.
A regular listener.
Yeah. He's as big a fan of the show as I would be of him. I think that might be. Anyway, that's it. That's it anyway for this week's show. We'll end it on that kind note. Derek Ryan, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Raf.
Joe Coffey.
Raf, pleasure as always.
Jonathan Higgins.
Cheers, Raf.
Connor Neville.
Thank you.
Kieran Bradley.
Cheers, Raf.
That's it for this week's show. Take it away, Johan.